Welcome to Clifton Health On Air. This is a special series on National Health Education Week, and today is Tuesday, October 22nd. We're talking about nurturing mental wellness for a healthier tomorrow. And today with us, we have Erica, Social Services Assistant, and Tom, Social Worker from the Clifton Health Department. I'm your host, Danielle, and my co-host, Lauren. Welcome.
Hey.
Hello, hello.
What do you guys do here at the health department?
So I, as a social services assistant, I work closely with Tom and our coworker, Nate, who is also a social services assistant. I am actually also a master's in social work intern. So that allows I'm doing my internship here as well. Hey. So that gives me a lot of freedom to take part in more social work, like actual social work. So I focus more on addiction, recovery, and mental health. And Mr. Tom?
I just drink coffee and talk sports with everyone. But in reality, I primarily focus on adolescent and youth mental health and disability services. So I work a lot with the Clifton School District, the Little Falls School District, the libraries in town, and Praise. With Praise, we do a lot of after-school recreational classes for individuals with special needs. And yeah, it's been a great experience.
So today is all about mental health, looking at the challenges faced by millions of Americans, and addressing how to make improvements for a healthier tomorrow. First, we'll tackle what is mental health.
Mental health has to do with the overall wellness of your cognitive state, and that ties into your physical health, how you're feeling, the anxiety level that you have, your daily experiences and how they make you feel. And, you know, that has a short-term and long-term effect, and everyone handles it and has different ways of coping with it, and we're here to talk about that.
Absolutely. So I just kind of briefly Googled some National Institute of Mental Health, some statistics. And in 2022, there were an estimated of 59.3 million adults age 18 or older in the United States with a mental health illness. And for younger adults age 18 to 25, years, there had been a high prevalence of AMI, which is a mental health illness, compared to adults age 26 to 49, which was 29.4%. So in your daily jobs, have you guys seen an increase in mental health illnesses?
Yeah, so I like the comparison you did there with the age differential. I think it's important to mention because someone who's younger in comparison, like, for example, someone who's 18 to 29 years of age, they're at a different stage in their life. They have to understand, you know, they're just graduating high school or college and they're just entering the adult stage in life. So they're trying to figure it all out. And, you know, it's something we all go through and we all have different ways of coping with it. So we're trying to figure out, you know, if we want to go to college, what career path we want to take, if we have personal things we have to take care of at home, our health. So there are a whole bunch of different things that we have to look into when considering mental health.
Yeah, no, I just building off of what Tom said, I feel like also there's a generational difference. Mm-hmm. So I feel like younger kids or, you know, young adults are more likely to reach out for help, because their generation is a little bit more accepting of mental illnesses, mental health disorders. So I do think the older generation is starting to become more knowledgeable on it, mm-hmm. which is really important. I definitely get a lot of adults that mention it. But yeah, no, the younger generation is really, you know, they're struggling with their mental health in different ways than others. Yeah. And it's important that we address it.
Absolutely. Yeah, and just to piggyback off of what Erica says, you know, generationally, it is very different because of the stigma of mental health. Mm. Today, you see more commercials, you see more movies and advertisements, you know, pushing for services and healthier mind states and just ways of helping people. Whereas 20, 30, 40 years ago, that wasn't something that you saw. It wasn't something that you talked about openly. So just that breaking of the stigma is something that's starting to improve mental health.
As we did discuss stigma that you guys talked about. So you guys talked about stigma. You touched upon that. How do you combat stigma? I guess, what are some tips a resident can do in order to kind of combat the stigma of mental health?
So I think if it's a resident who is struggling with mental health and they're kind of worried about what others are thinking or, you know, they might be saying about them, you know, I think it's important to remember that everyone is battling something. So whether or not another individual is talking about it, they're probably going through it as well. So it's really just important to focus on yourself and what you can control. We talk about that a lot. Mm-hmm. Part of, you know, taking care of your mental health is focusing on what you can control and not really focusing on what you can't control. So that's a big part of that.
Yeah. Erica, what would that look like? Something that we can control, I guess. Kind of, what would you say some tips would be?
So, for example, you know, you can't control if, or not always control if, let's say you get in a fender bender or, you know, you drop all your groceries all over the floor and everything goes everywhere. Those are things that you don't really have control over, but you can control how you react to it.
Yeah.
Maybe just taking a couple deep breaths, which might sound very, you know, overplayed or cliche, but it really makes a big difference. So just being self-aware and paying attention to how you respond to situations.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree with that. And also there are other alternative ways, you know, exercising, eating healthy meals, making sure you're getting enough sleep, talking to family, talking to coworkers, people you trust, you know, because the more you hold things inside, the more it builds up and then it just makes your life more stressful. So it's just, you know, knowing the simple things that you can do to help yourself.
You know, and kind of like what Tom said about exercise and eating right, getting enough sleep, you know, these are things that you hear a lot of people talk about pretty often. But it really does make a big difference in your mental health. And I know from personal experience, if I'm, you know, not walking around as much or if I'm not eating well, getting enough sleep, I can definitely notice a difference in my mental health. Mm-hmm. So it really does. There's not just one way to improve your mental health, which is important for people to know.
Right. There's not a one size fits all.
Exactly. Yes.
Connotation to mental health.
Yep. Right. Everyone's different. Everyone lives in different environments, surroundings. So, yeah, everyone is unique.
Yeah. Before we move on to another question, I'm going to actually discuss. We did a community health assessment here in Clifton, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And mental health did come up as one of the topics. And so I'm just going to read off some. These were responses to a survey we had, and it said 14.1% of Clifton residents reported frequent mental distress. COVID-19 exacerbated mental health challenges across the community, which increased anxiety, depression, isolation, and stress. I'm going to stop right there and just kind of talk about if people are experiencing anxiety, depression, isolation, and stress due to the COVID-19 pandemic. What, if they're still experiencing this, what can they do, I guess?
Yeah, just to go back, even if you think about it, when the pandemic first started, you know, we went from everyone doing whatever they wanted to do, the world was still open, and the very next day, everything shuts down, right? So everyone on this planet experienced a sense of isolation at the very same time. And that's not something we're naturally used to or accustomed to. So isolation, depression, loneliness and sadness just increased out of nowhere just because of that period of time in our lives. People are still experiencing that. It's going to take years in order for people to get through it. So if it's something you're still experiencing, it's okay to seek professional help. It's okay to talk to your partner, talk to your family, anyone you trust. You know, it's okay to, you know, just join a support group, see a counselor, a therapist, anything at all, because the longer you hold it in, the worse you'll feel in the long term.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Also, it's important for, like Tom mentioned, how everyone was experiencing this all at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're not alone in this. And I'm sure there are plenty of people who, you, like an individual might open up to, that probably feels the same way. So that's also one thing to remember, is that you're not alone and you're not the only one experiencing this.
Right. If someone is experiencing some form of loneliness and they're not able to talk to someone, is there any resources out there that they can kind of touch base with here, possibly at the health department or any other organizations around this area?
Yeah, I mean, we are always open for conversation. You know, if they don't have the resource or the contact information for anyone, or if they just are looking for someone to talk to just that day during that time, they can always give our office a call and ask to speak to someone in our social services division. We can also, you know, give them the contact information for other resources in the area if that works better for them.
I also, you know, not to do as much with the health department, but just in general, I feel like there's a lot of free resources on the internet nowadays. Mm-hmm. So I know there are like apps or websites where you can kind of like chat to a therapist. I personally have not used these, but I do think that if you're really looking for a resource and you can't access other professional help, I think it's worth a try. So, and there's also books that you can read out there on, you know, managing stress, dealing with loneliness and isolation. Or if you don't like to read, you can get the audiobook, listen to podcasts. So yeah, there's so many resources and options out there.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that Erica makes, because when you read a book or listen to a podcast, you will receive or hear a story from someone else who may have gone through what you're experiencing, and that can help you get through what you're going through.
Right. And that's a really great point, because one of the key points that came up under mental health with our CHOB was limited access and or lack of awareness to mental health and addiction specialists.
So yeah, when it comes to addiction and recovery, that can be obviously different than your day-to-day, like depression, anxiety, because that, I mean, while mental health disorders, they all can require clinical treatment, with addiction and recovery, that tends to be a little more of a difficult process.
Okay.
So, but like Tom was saying, you can always call the health department. No matter what your circumstances are, we will do our best to get you some form of help.
Yeah, and I think it's important to address the way we word it, because, you know, a lot of the time for people who are going through substance abuse or any type of counseling, you know, they want you to address that you have a problem. I wouldn't say it's a problem. I would just say, you know, you want to make a positive change in your life, or mm-hmm. increase the positive change you're making.
It's so true. And the way that that we talk about these things is so important. Like, we've taken some trainings about, you know, talking to people that are struggling with addiction and to address them as just individuals who might be struggling with substance use disorder, as opposed to an addict or a junkie, because then you're just making that whole label their personality, and they're a person before that. So, and same thing with mental health. Could be someone, an individual struggling with depression or anxiety, not just someone who's depressed or anxious. So.
Right, kind of changing the narrative and changing the way that you say things. And you both touched upon this, but substance use and addiction didn't come up as well as one of the key points in our chat. So substance use and addiction are prevalent, and that was highlighted in our CHA and the data that showed. So I know, Erica, that's your specialty. If someone is struggling and they are unable to tell a family member, or they happen to be young, or maybe just kicked out of their house or something like that, or they're having an extreme circumstance, how can the health department help them? Or what resources are out there for them?
So you can always call 211, and they can also guide you over the phone about potential resources. If you don't want to call 211, you can always call the health department, or you can come here and we can, you know, sit down, talk to you, try and figure out what might be the best approach. Because, you know, I think the most important part is just to reach out to someone else. You know, it's not, unfortunately, addiction isn't really something that you can just handle on your own, which I think some people struggle to accept. But it really is the most important part is just reaching out to someone.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that, because that might be the hardest, not knowing where to go. And so to have us at the health department able to help them in any way, that's very important. Another thing that came about related to mental health was child and youth mental health, and particularly children mental health and media, and how important media is in their daily lives and how social media affects their mental health. Cyberbullying was talked about, and they were just saying how cyberbullying impacts mental health issues. How would we combat that? How can we stop all the bullies out there?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a way of stopping it, but I think the key is education at an early age. We here at the health department, our social service division, have developed a cyberbullying training that we would like to implement and teach to the Clifton School District, any new staff members within the Boys and Girls Club. But education is key. Knowing the indicators, the signs, and different, you know, triggers and things that kids are showing, you know, physically, emotionally, mentally, that shows that they're experiencing cyberbullying. It can be as simple as, you know, just coming home and not being interactive with your parents or family, to, you know, just crying, going upstairs and crying because of something someone said or did to you online. So it's a huge problem, unfortunately, and due to the fact that so many children today do use social media for those reasons, you know, it's become a big problem.
It really has, and it's kind of instant. It is, unfortunately, everywhere. And so to be able to provide that training, that's very important. But speaking about youth and mental health, is there any particular programs you guys have been doing to kind of combat the mental health in children?
Last fall, we started a mindfulness class in the Clifton and Little Falls School District. And the class itself is a youth mental health improvement program that focuses on the social-emotional learning aspect of child education. It's been great. We start out with an introduction class that really teaches kids about what anxiety is, what mindfulness is, and what are some techniques they can use for anxiety reduction. Then we talk about mindful listening to help improve their ability to focus in school when there are a lot of outside distractors and sounds and noises. Then we go into mindful test taking. That's something that I'm sure a lot of us have experienced, and a lot of kids today still do when taking a test or an exam at some point. And then last, we talk about gratitude and how important it is to be grateful for the people in your life, the things in your life, and the different experiences that you go through. So we feel like it's a great program because we're teaching and also training children at an early age on how to not only combat, but also understand and control their anxieties.
Yeah, no, and just adding on to what Tom was saying about the program, I feel like it's been very fulfilling to see the results that we've been getting, not only from the students, but also from the teachers. And, you know, I've run into some students that we've taught in the past mindfulness, and I've seen them like out in other community events, and the parents will tell me that the kids come home and like tell them all about the meditation and show them the worksheet that they got. Yes. And like tell them to practice it with them. It's the cutest thing.
The best.
Yeah.
To have.
Yeah. Yeah. And these kids are also, this is also an example of like a generational difference because they're so accepting and open to talking about mental health. It's almost like normal. Like it's very opposite than like it being hidden. It's like encouraged to talk about, which is really, it's really a good sign.
Do you think that's what us as public health professionals should push towards for tomorrow, for a healthier tomorrow, to kind of just keep that conversation going about mental health?
Yeah, no, definitely. Because, you know, in public health, we're big on prevention. So getting to the issue before it arises. And I feel like the age group that we work with, you know, elementary school kids, it's perfect because it's right before they go into bigger transitions or transitional periods in life where they might experience these mental health challenges. So I guess we're curious to see, you know, how this develops over the years. Okay. But I feel like overall it's had a really great impact on the kids in our community.
Yeah, and just to give some extra feedback on what Erica was just saying, we have had some really great examples and stories that the kids have told us from the mindfulness practices that they've used. For example, we had a lockdown drill in one of our classes, and during the lockdown drill, we had two students in one room experience an anxiety attack from that drill. I remember one was asking me if there was an active shooter actually in the school, and then the other student was just sitting on the floor and shaking. So when witnessing that, myself and the teacher in the classroom reminded the students of the techniques that we just completed, to take a few deep breaths and, you know, just stay calm, that this was just practice, nothing was actually happening. And we saw a tremendous result from that. And then the other example was in one school in Little Falls when we were teaching the class. The girl came up to me and actually told me that she was using the breathing techniques for her medical treatment and that she was just starting treatment for leukemia. And before her first treatment, you know, she was very nervous. She couldn't sleep the night before. Wow. And it's a lot for someone at that age to experience.
Yeah, yeah. I think people don't really realize how young stressors can be at a certain age. Like little kids are experiencing really big stressors. And so this is a very important topic. So how do you kind of reframe, I guess this would go back to stigma, for some individuals who don't really enjoy mental health or don't want to have their child taught this specific program?
I think, you know, it's better to teach a child who will eventually be an adult to be open and talk freely about their emotions and feelings at an early age, because they'll be more accepting, they'll be more open and willing to talk about it, because it will happen eventually and it will be much more difficult later on in life if they keep it in.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I feel like also it's good that the children come home and tell their parents about these programs, because maybe it could even help them. I don't know.
No, I think it, yeah, overall, if all the children come home and help their families one step at a time, it'll definitely move the needle. You guys are both doing an amazing job.
No, yeah, even if you, like, you know, look back at our lives, like, if we were to understand what the word anxiety meant, whew, and, like, what anxieties we had as a 7 or 8-year-old, you know, whether it was in school or family issues and things that you had happening in your house, if you were able to learn something in school that taught you to remain calm, taught you to how to control your anxiety, and most importantly, taught you that it's okay to talk to somebody about it.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't be encouraged to talk about this, because at the end of the day, this is really about regulating and managing your emotions.
Yeah, I was just more so emotions and how, like, young boys, is that kind of a form of being a vulnerable man? Like, is that kind of making them weaker, right? Mm-hmm. Some viewpoints out there might think that, like...
Yeah, I think we're starting to crack that societal egg that taught a lot of prior generations that you have to be a specific way. But that was just, you know, that was all conditioned. There really is no true definition on how someone should be. You are an individual, and you are going to make your own independent choices in life. And it's better to be able to talk about that stuff at an earlier age.
Mm-hmm. And also, I know there's definitely, like, a lot of cultural differences and beliefs on mental health. You know, we all know this. And the good thing about Clifton is that we are so diverse. I think there's, what, like 60 languages spoken in the city of Clifton.
Yeah, 60 plus languages, and we're about...
Yeah. We see every culture under the sun, and each and every one of them are, like, children, I'm saying, are very accepting and involved and very open to mental health and talking about emotional regulation and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like Tom said, I think we're starting to crack that.
Awesome. Any final words?
Well, first, I want to thank you guys for having us. I just, you know, just want to make it clear that, you know, mental health does not have to be a stigma. It is part of your overall health. Whether you are a child, an adult, a senior, it's okay to seek help. It's okay to talk to someone. Just always be mindful of your life situation.
And also, thank you for having us. I'm always happy to be on the podcast with you guys. And yeah, I think it's also just important to remember that at the end of the day, everyone is struggling with something. So you're never alone. And it's, you know, the hardest part is reaching out to someone. Mm-hmm. So once you go that far, it can make a big difference.
Absolutely. Thank you both for being on this podcast. And
of course.
Truly enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah.
And I know our residents will too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Of course.
Have a great day.
Me too.
Tune in to our podcast every day this week for a new episode. If you have any questions, you can email us at health@cliftonnj.org. You can visit our website, www.cliftonnj.org. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. Our handle is Clifton Health. And as we do before we leave every day, let us ask ourselves, did you make a difference in someone's life today?